Go Tell It on the Mountain. At 8, it's the Seasons Griot 2013. This year's program celebrates family with special guests Beverly Burnett and others. That's Christmas with the Morehouse and Spelman Glee Clubs and a Seasons Griot 2013 on the evening concert tonight starting at 7 on WILL FM 90.9.
One day I'll make a difference and do the world some good. Leave my mark with what I've done as an inspiration would.
Greetings, I'm Madafo. Join me for a salute to our children and a celebration of Kwanzaa on a Seasons Griot from PRI Public Radio International.
Thursday morning at 10 on AM 580.
NPR's business news starts with a delay. Okay, actually, a lot of delays. Southwest Airlines finished last in on-time arrivals in October, the last month for which statistics are available. According to the Department of Transportation, Southwest's on-time arrival rate was 78.8%. This was the second month in a row that the airline came in at the very back of the pack, which is a little surprising since Southwest usually tops lists of customer satisfaction. Travelers have given that airline high marks for the free bag check and its no-fee policy for flight changes. Now, researchers in Europe have been trying to answer a pretty big question. How much food is there in the world? They've tracked the availability of food for the past 50 years. The good news is there seems to be more of it in countries that used to have little. But as NPR's Christopher Joyce reports, those countries aren't necessarily growing it themselves.
In 1965, there were lots of places that didn't have enough food for their citizens. This was especially true in parts of the Middle East, Africa, Latin America, China, and Southeast Asia. In fact, in 1965, only one-third of the world's population had what the researchers deemed a sufficient food supply, 2,500 or more calories per person a day. Now, that percentage of sufficiently fed people is just over 60%. But many of these countries where supply has improved did not make up the food deficit themselves by growing it. Instead, they imported it from abroad. Cross-border trade in food has skyrocketed in the past 50 years. The major exporters have been the U.S., Canada, Australia, and Argentina. Brazil, once a place with its own food deficit, is also a major producer of food grown just for export. Along with the rise in food trade and consumption, people are eating more animal-based food as well. The supply of calories from animal-based nutrition has increased 2.6 times. Writing in the journal PLOS, the researchers note that the increase in high-calorie diets has also increased people's weight. Recent research shows more obesity in places like China and Pacific Island nations. Christopher Joyce, NPR News.
In the Israeli-occupied West Bank, economic growth has been slowing this year. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has proposed an ambitious plan to lure large-scale foreign investment, but details of his plan remain under wraps. Small businesses make up the vast majority of companies in the West Bank, and Pierce Emily Harris has this profile of one new one.
Before opening a cafe, Palestinian Tariq El-Ayan worked on documentary films.
All the projects that I worked in were about Palestinian-Israeli conflict. It's tiring.
His wife, Crystal El-Ayan, says he'd come home not just tired, but frustrated.
You want to see hope for a future where everybody's equal, but you don't see it happening. For each film, if you are confronted with this kind of information, then it just makes you a little bit upset. Yeah.
Upset, angry, not really nice to other people. So, yeah, I prefer making people happy with my coffee.
2 months in, they seem to be succeeding with two paid employees and steady traffic. The Singer Cafe is in the old quarter of Beit Sahur, a small Palestinian town down the hill from Bethlehem. The cafe has a long wooden bar, a lending library, table games, and free Wi-Fi. For the U.S., Europe, and even Israel, just on the other side of the tall concrete separation wall, this type of place is normal. But not here, says Palestinian student Lara Hodeley.
No, it's not normal for here, for people here.
For starters, she says, there's a no-smoking room. But more than that, says her friend Miral Amma, this cafe feels different than other local spots.
Here, like, you can be yourself. You find interesting people, interesting books, interesting things to see.
Lamps made locally of clothespins hang from high arched ceilings. Old sewing machines are everywhere, for no reason except Tadek thinks old sewing tables are really cool. Only espresso coffee drinks are available. Tarek didn't want to serve Arabic coffee, traditionally swirled in a copper pot over an open flame and flavored with cardamom.
Everybody can drink Arabic coffee at home, so this is to experience different kind of coffees.
But while he and his wife, Crystal, who's Dutch, prefer European coffee, they see their new business as a way to keep telling stories about Palestinian life for foreign visitors, just as Tadek did in his documentary film work.
We started offering people tours. We showed them the wall, the settlements, showing them the refugee camps and telling them about the life of the refugees, and then having lunch or having coffee in the cafe and meeting other Palestinians to continue talking about the life here and how people experience that.
Some experiences of West Bank life don't help business. The local water pressure is so low, the espresso machine has to have a special pump. Tadek and Crystal cross an Israeli military checkpoint to and from home just minutes away in Jerusalem. And there is always the possibility of instability or violence that could put their $30,000 investment at risk. But for now, they're doing business in coffee and conversation. Emily Harris, NPR News.
And today's last word in business is tunnel. Come on, admit it. When you were a kid, you sat on the beach using those plastic shovels, you started digging, and you said, I'm going to dig a tunnel all the way to China. Well, the Chinese military, on patrol, recently uncovered a secret tunnel. Okay, it doesn't run through the Earth's core. But this 130-foot underground passageway goes from the city of Shenzhen to Hong Kong. It's outfitted with concrete walls, interior lighting, and rail tracks, presumably intended to transport goods. Chinese authorities believe a gang intended to use the tunnel to smuggle cell phones and other electronics to Hong Kong, which has lower tariffs than on the mainland. Phew, it's lucky the Chinese military never found that tunnel I dug as a kid on the beach in Margate, New Jersey. Shh, don't tell. That's the Business News on Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm David Green.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Kresge Foundation, expanding opportunities in America's cities at kresge.org. From Frederica and Howard Stevenson, supporting Olin College, which is working to revolutionize engineering education at olin.edu. From Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. And from the Gruber Family Foundation, to help extend the depth of international coverage of the world's most significant issues. This is NPR.
Welcome to Assignment. I'm Linda Presley and I'm on the road with Brazil's anti-slavery hit squad.
It's a team of labour inspectors protected by armed police. Brazil has done more than most nations in the world to tackle modern-day slavery in its poor and remote communities.
What we know with precision in Brazil is the number of people who have been released from slavery. 46,000 people since 1995.
But in the 21st century, what is slavery? Not all Brazilians believe appalling conditions at work constitute enslavement.
Slave labor doesn't exist here. What we see at times is inhumane treatment. Our laborers have complete freedom to come and go.
That's Assignment on the BBC World Service with me, Linda Presley, investigating modern-day slavery in Brazil in 5 minutes.